What we need to know about Islam is that it's the world's fastest growing religion and the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel.
Hank Canagraph of the Bible Answer Man talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The current narrative is that if you tell the truth in this regard, well, you'll radicalize Muslims. But that's pure propaganda. What we need to do is wake up to the truth concerning Islam.
You can meet and hear Hank Canagraph making the case against Islam at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The term fake news is now thrown about by every facet of the political spectrum. The right, the left, they all have their own definition of what that term must mean. But really, is it that easy to dismiss something we either disagree with or we suspect as being less than thoroughly true when we find it in the news media just to say it's fake, I don't have to pay attention to it, or simply to write off this news channel or that news channel or this newspaper or that newspaper? Is there a way of actually approaching the news media that is more discerning than writing one or more outlets off and restricting yourself to consuming your news thoroughly from one channel or one newspaper or one website? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, March the 28th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be hearing Terry Mattingly making the case for news discernment from the 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference here in the first part of this hour on this Wednesday afternoon. And then a little bit later and into hour two, Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will be making the case for the Reformation's relevancy. Terry Mattingly is senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Here's Terry's presentation, Making the Case for News Discernment from the 2017 Summer Making the Case Conference.
Are there any Calvinists in the room? I'm going to exercise free will here, and this, I'm going to get out of this. Sorry, lady, but better you than me. You have sunglasses. Go ahead and put the glasses down. You'll look exotic. Okay, we're here to talk about the insanity that is the American news right now. And I do not want to get pulled into a discussion of the contents. I'll go ahead and confess right up front that I was a never Hillary, never Trump. So I've gone through the last year kind of in the experience of Bill Murray getting that root canal, you know, in the alien invasion movie. I'm glad I got that off my chest. Journalists like to try to give you the lead first. So here's where we're going tonight. I'm going to give you the idea, and then I'm going to try to explain it, okay? The idea, I just scribbled it down. It took me a while to try to get it into words. This is my first time with this outline, so you're getting some new material tonight. American public discourse is broken. Right now, American citizens are being totally hypocritical about the news. We say we want real news, yet all of the data indicates we continue to consume more and more biased and advocacy news sources that tell us what we already believe. All the stats show this. Your choice tonight. Do you want to make an attempt to listen to the voices of other Americans with whom you disagree? Are you even going to take a stab at that in terms of being able to hear what's going on in our culture? I saw a statistic just yesterday that freaked me out. They asked they gave Republicans and Democrats a series of words to choose to describe their feelings about people in the other party. Not the other party just like a disembodied mass of chemicals or something from the last lecture, depressed chemicals in this case. But what do you think of the other party? 40% of Republicans asked what they think of Democrats, chose the word hate. 40% of Democrats chose the word hate for their view of Republicans. A couple of years ago, a couple of elections ago, 92% of the delegates at the Democratic National Convention gave their feeling toward evangelical Protestants a rating of 0. We're not in good shape right now. And this shows up tremendously in our media. And frankly, technology is not helping us one bit. I went to the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, which you can tell that I went there because I called it Urbana-Champaign, which very hardly anybody ever reads the actual seal. Lived over in the tree streets of Urbana for a number of years, loved it. And the mantra of the mass communications program where I did my master's degree was technology shapes content. And brother, is the internet doing this to us right now? How many of you shop on Amazon? Since Amazon is like, what, 70% of all online commerce in America? That's probably most of you. So then you know the experience of when you go to other websites, issues, etc., for all I know, and your Amazon choices follow you around. I mean, wherever I go, I am chased by ads for inexpensive walking shoes, you know. You know, and anything that has to do with acoustic guitars and nice things made out of leather. I don't know what that is. By that, I mean shoulder bags, wallets, you know, stuff that you want to own for more than 2 to 3 years. That is an algorithm that has been created to make the ads more effective. I actually don't mind that algorithm all that much because it's better than some of the other stuff they try to interrupt my reading experience with, right? Siri and some of these other audio products are now being programmed to predict what you're going to want based on your previous choices, right? This is going to soon reach your news. They're going to produce a version of the New York Times for tablet that remembers what you read before and restructures the New York Times to fit your biases. This is going to be hard on social and moral issues because there's nothing in the New York Times that fits my moral and social biases. So that they're going to have to, other than Ross Douthat, they're going to have to create some new stuff. This technology is soon going to become normative. In the early 90s, communication scholars began talking about the old concept of the newspaper. You know, those things on paper with ink. The concept behind this, they called it the daily we. That there was supposed to be a media product that we would consume that would help us learn about other people in our community, in our nation, and that we would at least be consuming some of the same information for the sake of debate, discourse, etc. The internet is absolutely brilliant at destroying the daily we. The internet is all about narrow little niches of people who believe and are interested in the same thing. And they began calling this the daily me. And you're going to pick up your news source if you choose, or maybe even in some cases, even if you don't. And it's going to be crafted to fit your biases. I grew up Southern Baptist in Texas, and the term for this is preaching to the choir. And that's where we are right now. So that's the overture. We're in, you've all heard, journalism is dying, newspapers are dying, we're in a journalism crisis. We're not actually in a journalism crisis, we're in an advertising crisis that's causing the journalism crisis. The basic fact is that online ads don't work. And without the ability to sell advertising, you have almost no way whatsoever to independently produce news and information. Otherwise, it's based on how can they make you click things over and over and over to try to fake out the ads to make you think that they're working. Clickbait is the title. And other than dancing cats, you know, are things of that nature, for the most part, they make you click things by exposing you to things that they already know you want to see. This can be embarrassing sometimes, can't it? It's kind of like involuntary confession. You're being reminded of what... A brief, this is not in my outline. Trust me, this is not in my outline. My brother-in-law once said that he learned more about himself once, decades ago. This is a man with a PhD in psychology of religion. When he went to see the movie Blazing Saddles, and he was the only person in the theater, which meant he had to listen to when he laughed. And there was no way out of admitting. Like he's trying to sing, they're frantically trying not. That's what our media is doing to us. They're holding up a mirror right now to kind of who we are and what we want to consume. I need to give you a little bit of journalism history so you'll understand some of the terms I'm going to use tonight. The oldest model of the press is normally referred to as the European model of the press. It came over to the colonies, literally from Europe. And basically, newspapers under the European model of the press are openly biased and advocacy model presses. Now, there was a technical reason for this. They could only print so many papers. The best way to make money by selling them and running the ads was to sell them to a narrow group of people that they knew would instantly buy the paper. So at one point in New York City, there were 22 daily newspapers. You had a Puerto Rican paper, you had a Jewish paper, you had a paper in Yiddish. You had an African-American newspaper, you had a Catholic newspaper. Believe it or not, very few people realize this, you had an openly avowed Christian newspaper in New York. It was quite good. Then it began to decline because they didn't want to do what everybody else was doing, which was beginning to broaden up and be fair and treat the lives of everybody. So the Christians sold off their newspaper and got out of their newspaper, out of the newspaper business. And that paper still exists today, and you would all know it. It's called the New York Times. Kind of a quick parable there for how Christians keep running away from mainstream work in media. We'll come back to that at the end, too. The American model of the press developed in the late 19th century as the printing presses began to speed up. Also, the teletype came along, and all of a sudden you could cover news over great distances, and you could print more newspapers. And it made sense to produce newspapers for everyone, because then you could sell ads for everyone. And this meant that you needed to try to do a kind of journalism that was fair and accurate and balanced to everyone. So you've probably have grown up hearing the word objectivity defined in terms of this kind of an attempt in a sinful, fallen world, an attempt to be as accurate and balanced and fair-minded as you can be to people on both sides of debates. And that's what American journalism was about for about a century or so. It was never perfect, but it was way better than what we've got now.
When we come back from this break, we'll hear Terry Mattingly from his 2017 Summer Issues, Etc., Making the Case conference presentation on making the case for news discernment, talk about another Christian view of the press. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc.
Coming this Easter Sunday, sacred music for the Easter season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, coming Easter Sunday at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
This Lent, as you reflect on your chocolate and caffeine dependence, take a few moments to examine your reading habits, too. Are you feeding your soul on a diet of clickbait and tabloid fluff? Why not try a magazine with real spiritual substance? The Lutheran Witness brings the best of Lutheran reflection on faith and life, theology and culture right to you during Lent and throughout the year. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Well, I think one thing we're going to do right out of the gate is define what pro-life is.
Scott Klusendorf talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference.
That term is now being confused. It's being put up for grabs, and we're going to make clear what the pro-life syllogism is, how we can make that case for life with people who don't accept biblical authority, who maybe don't even know what it is we stand for, and are subject to being confused. So there's a crying need to clarify what pro-life means, what our actual arguments are, and then we'll look at five bad ways people argue against the pro-life case in the public square so that we can be prepared to give good, solid, Christ-honoring answers.
You can meet and hear Scott Klusendorf making the case for life at the Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Learn more about conference speakers and topics and register at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're hearing a presentation from the 2017 Summer Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference by Terry Mattingly of Get Religion about making the case for news discernment. Let's go back to his presentation. Here is Terry with another Christian view of the press.
There are other views of the press, primarily among Christians. I teach a class on this at the King's College. Some of you may have heard of a writer named Marvin Olasky. And Marvin Olasky of World Magazine basically has created kind of a Christian version of the European model of press, which is where you're editing with the Bible making the key editorial choices. There are also a lot of Christians who, quite frankly, don't like news at all. And the only news they think that's good is good news, and basically they think everybody should be doing PR. And there are Christians who wouldn't recognize a balanced, accurate, fair-minded story if it kicked them. All they want is their side of the story. There are, of course, liberals that feel the same way, but frankly, not as many of them. Even before the fake news tsunami of 2016, America was already consuming mountains of advocacy-biased news of their own free will. The cable news industry has brought this to us, finally, to where we have two networks that basically no longer do news at all. Fox News has one remaining news show on the channel, and that's the 6 o'clock report, which was created by a wonderful journalist named Britt Hume a number of years ago, who's one of the outspoken Christians in the mainstream press in Washington. But otherwise, everything else on Fox is opinion and commentary shows. MSNBC is the same thing on the left, except I don't even think they have a news hour anymore. I think it's basically just commentary from the start to the end. But when you ask Americans where they get their news, a lot of them will say, Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, Rachel Maddow. These are not news people. These are commentary people. We stopped, to some degree, even reading the news 15 to 20 years ago. And it caught up with us this year. And it also what happened, this is even beginning to affect our sports. How many of you are following the controversies at ESPN and the plummeting ratings at ESPN? And their own public editor has had to kind of address this openly. You know, well, should we even bother to cover religion? Why can't we take stands on moral issues as a part of our news? Some of you may be familiar with a publication called BuzzFeed. It's very popular among the young. The creator of the listicle, the thing where you click through the list to read the article. The newsroom style guide at BuzzFeed, the newsroom style is that on issues of abortion and sexuality, there are no longer two sides to these stories. We will only report one side. We will not listen to the other side. That's European news, folks. The internet is pulling us back into European news. What's been the impact on public discourse? The polls show consistently Americans have no idea what people on the other side of issues think or why they think it, other than that they're bigots or evil or of the devil. Pick your choice. And then you look at the maps. You've seen the impact of this, right? The urban versus rural divide, which leapt into the American consciousness with the 2000 election, where they did the counties by blue and red. You remember that? And Bush won like 2,800 counties, and Gore won like 600. But he won all of the urban ones, so the votes were almost, and that's been reproduced in almost every single election since then. If you look online, there's a wonderful editorial cartoon about this that takes that idea all the way to the next level. And it takes all of North America, and it takes that red area, and it has now been proclaimed by this political cartoonist, a nation called Jesus Land. And Canada and the East Coast and the West Coast is the United States of Canada, reason and science. No negative editorial views contained in that judgment at all. But the cultural divide is real. The People's Republic of Greater Canada is what I wrote down as my version. Americans no longer talk to each other over this divide in public discourse. Now it's even beginning to get, these counties are even getting further apart. The number of counties in the last presidential election where there was any question about who they would vote for was like 5% of American counties on presidential voting were settled by anything less than 15%. There are just cultural landslides in these areas. Who needs public discourse? Who needs news? You already know what you think, right? A couple of key concepts out of this. I really, really hope that you come out of this talk thinking less about the news industry in monolithic terms. There are biased reporters, and there are tons of really good reporters. But you can't seem to say that to anybody right now. Donald Trump said the press is the enemy. Meanwhile, what the press doesn't want to admit is that key elements of our elite and most powerful press genuinely hate the beliefs of about 25 to 30% of Americans. And all of this is about moral and cultural issues. The bitterest divides in American life are all on the issues most linked to religion, morality, and culture. Thus, Jesus land versus the land of reason, science, and Canada. This is also showing up in our religious life. A wonderful scholar named John Green, who teaches at Akron, University of Akron in Ohio. I've been following him now for about 25 years. John has been focusing on issues of religion and politics way before it was cool. And in 2008, he spoke to a seminar at the Washington Journalism Center, which I was leading at the time. That's the program that moved to New York 2 years ago. And he wrote up on the board something that a lot of you have now heard in recent news. How many of you have heard of the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, the religiously unaffiliated? Now, you're probably used to hearing that and saying a lot of people are giving up religion. That's true, but it's important to stop and realize something else. And he wrote this on the board a decade ago in my classroom. America now looks like this. You have about 20 to 22% of America is kind of on the cultural right, and they are best defined by the fact that they are sincerely attempting to live out a religious tradition. It's been showing up in Gallup for decades. That's about 20% of the American public. Just 20. The news is that the atheist, agnostic, religiously unaffiliated, and the few remaining mainline Protestants on the left, they're now up to about 22 to 25%. And that is now the largest identifiable niche and point of view in the modern Democratic Party, just as cultural conservatives are the largest and most dependable voting bloc within the Republican Party. So this has only made us even more vitriolic in our divide on moral and cultural issues. In the middle of these two sectors are what I call Oprah America. And basically, this is kind of a mushy, moralistic, therapeutic deism nation of people that kind of are religious, but it's all basically emotive, and it's there sometime, and it's not there sometime, and it depends on how you word the questions in the polls. And that's the swing voters. They go all over the place. Now, what's intriguing is that the nuns are not coming out of the devout. The devout are not shrinking. What's shrinking is the middle. People who were marginally religious. Growing up in Texas, we used to say that in Texas there's more Baptists than there are people. You know, and what that means is there's a lot of them that are all just kind of culturally, well, kind of like Lutherans in the upper Midwest or Catholics in a lot of places. You've got folks that are kind of just marginally culturally identified with a religion. That's who now is going ahead and kicking all the way out into religiously unaffiliated at the level of the young. And what unites these people more than anything else? Antipathy to traditional religion on issues of sexuality and morality. I wish that wasn't true, but it's right there in the Pew Forum data. So guess which issues we're having the most trouble covering in the press? There's a website called Get Religion that you can look that up, like 12 million words worth of commentary on that.
Well, listening to Terry Mattingly make the case for news discernment from the 2017 Summer Issues, Etc., making the case conference on this Wednesday afternoon. Terry is senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. The subject of discernment is broader than simply where you get your news. It's also how you raise your children and how you educate your children to engage the culture more broadly than even the news that we consume. Our Issues, Etc., a book of the month for March, will help you do that. It's called Embracing God, the Character, the Christian Community's Response to a Godless Culture. Find it on every page of the website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and ask for Embracing Godly Character. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. When we come back, Terry's going to talk about the New York Times and the BBC and how this discernment needs to recognize that some news outlets are really good in some areas and not so good in others. Stay tuned. How did Christian communities in the past respond to godless cultures? The Issues, Etc., book of the month for March, is titled Embracing Godly Character, the Christian Community's Response to a Godless Culture. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Embracing Godly Character at issuesetc.org. The Issues, Etc., book of the month, Embracing Godly Character, 1-800-325-3040.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. St. Paul's Lutheran, Coleman, Alabama. Faith Lutheran, Waterloo, Iowa. Emmanuel Lutheran, Everett, Washington. Lake George Lutheran Chapel, Fremont, Indiana. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Snohomish, Washington. Faith Lutheran, Buford, South Carolina. Trinity Lutheran, Great Falls, Montana. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Westview, Pennsylvania. St. Paul Lutheran, International Falls, Minnesota. Redeemer Lutheran, Marshalltown, Iowa. Trinity and Grace Lutheran, Bear Creek, Wisconsin. St. Paul Lutheran, Sevierville, Tennessee. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Sherman, Illinois. And Zion Lutheran, Dexter, Iowa. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. The Issues, Etc. 300. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. We are listening to Terry Mattingly's 2017 Making the Case Conference presentation, Making the Case for News Discernment. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. Let's go back to his presentation. Terry's going to talk a little bit about the New York Times and the BBC as examples of news outlets that are solid on some things, but not on others.
Some media are solid, some are not, and some media are solid on some topics, but not others. I'll briefly mention the New York Times here, since the New York Times, along with the BBC, is the most important news organization in the world. Certainly the most powerful. A number of years ago, a man named Bill Keller retired as editor of the New York Times. And a couple of days after his retirement, he was interviewed in a program at the LBJ Library at the University of Texas in the People's Republic of Austin. And he was asked, does the New York Times slant the news to the left? His answer, we're liberal in the sense that liberal art schools are liberal. We're an urban newspaper. We write about evolution as fact. We don't give equal time to creationism. Keller continued, we're liberal in the sense that we're open-minded, sort of tolerant, urban. Our wedding page includes, and did even before the New York had a gay marriage law, included gay unions. So we're liberal in that sense of the word. We're socially liberal. Asked directly if the Times slants its cover to favor Democrats and liberals, he said, aside from that liberal social values thing I talked about, no, I don't think we do. Aside from. As I wrote it, so what are the moral social issues that they feel free to no longer try to be neutral or accurate or balanced on? I just said that, you know, that just simply includes sex, salvation, abortion, euthanasia, gay rights, cloning, and a few other sensitive matters linked to religion. That's all. Just all of the things that have divided America the most post Roe versus Wade. Adults, have you ever known an election in the last 30 years that didn't really come down to who controls the Supreme Court as the ultimate threat to loyal voters in both parties? The fundraising bottom line, who controls the court? Why? What are the issues there? We finally at Get Religion gave this a name, Kellerism. Kellerism is a journalistic doctrine that says you don't need to be fair to bigots. Error has no rights. There's no need to do fair and balanced and accurate coverage when you already know who's right. But the rest of the New York Times has tons of brilliant stuff in it. And you cannot ignore the New York Times. You cannot ignore National Public Radio, which every Republican in Washington, D.C. still has as the first button on their car radio. A friend of mine calls the Episcopal Church National Public Radio at Prayer. You can turn that equation around and get the religious worldview of NPR, for the most part. They're not anti-religion. They're anti-certain kinds of religion. Folks, also I want you to think of this as a ministry issue. Ed Stetzer of Wheaton College, formerly of the Southern Baptist Convention Research Office in Nashville, he believes that lying is lying and do not bear false witness includes to what you do with your mouse clicking forward. And our ministers need to start talking about what happens when we spread hearsay and rumor from biased news sources. But at the same time, how do you do apologetics if you're not listening to the media? The late Anglican theologian John Stott used to say that the goal of life in the second half of the 20th century was to live your life with a Bible in one hand and a newspaper in the other. And you had to make sense of both. So a few practical steps here in conclusion. A few things I'd like you to think about. There are deals out there on media. I want you to not give up on reading and purchasing the news. But meanwhile, you can sign up at the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, and a bunch of others for free summaries of their top stories. Go to their website, search around a little bit. It'd be good if your church helped you and actually posted some of these addresses in the name of public discourse. And for free, get yourself sent the top 40 stories of the day. Some of them may make you furious, but it's good to know what the culture's thinking. You should know that there are publications that are just simply of such high quality, you should read them anyway. I put the Atlantic Monthly into this category right now. Its analysis It's to the left of where I am on moral and cultural issues, but they publish interesting people and ideas. You're going to have to find a couple of news sources that you trust. Okay, how many of you are on Twitter? Not many. I'm going to suggest that you get on Twitter, and not just to follow me and make me feel better, or follow issues, etc., and make them feel better. We're all about feeling better. Your goal is to find about 20 to 30 people whose views of news in the world you appreciate enough that you're going to let them help you wrestle with what's going on in public life. It may be Peggy Noonan of the Wall Street Journal, a great Christian in the field of journalism, Ross Douthat of the New York Times, Rod Dreher. You know, there are people that you can find, and you'll hear about important articles that Molly Ziegler Hemingway, by all means, Mark Hemingway. Find yourself about 10 to 20 people, and these people will actually end up saving you time. Okay? These people read everything. And to a certain degree, you're going to be slightly lazy. In addition to that 10 to 20 people on Twitter, you need to find three or four blogs that are interested in the subjects that matter most to you, yet also look at the left as well as the right and at least try to review it all. A name that I have tremendous respect for right now, I would like you to all write it down. If you do not know the work of a man named David French, he's at National Review, but he was one of the leaders of the Never Trump movement. So he's a conservative who was not a Trump. He's a military veteran, I believe it was in Afghanistan, with a law degree from Harvard, who for 25 years has made his specialty religious liberty defense. He's brilliant, he writes well, and you cannot simplify his views down into some little easy stereotypical label. Check him out. He's on Twitter too. I could go on and on with this. But there's somebody else who should be helping you with this. Your church. I think every pastor in the Missouri Synod should try to find three people. No, less than two. There's a biblical precedent for that. Three people that are going to read the media widely and help their pastor and their church wrestle with news sources. Call them your media advisory committee. Call them your real world advisory committee. On your website of your church, post links to places where people are getting good information that they have found trustworthy. And then, this is more important than anything else, dialogue with your local newspaper. This may sound wild, but think about it. I want you to pretend that your Missouri Synod Lutheran Church is a gay rights organization. And I want you to deal with the media exactly the way they do. They call up and react to every good story and every bad story. Man, that was a fantastic story you had on page one. More of that. Thank you. How long has it been since you've heard of anybody thanking your local newspaper for coverage? They're used to ducking into bomb shelters when pastors call. And in addition to the negative critiques, positive critiques, give them negative critiques. You got this part wrong. There are some people in my church who really care about that issue. I'd be glad to give you their phone numbers. Let us get you some material to read. Let us help you wrestle with that issue. Now, some journalists won't care, but some will. And you will improve the discourse with your public newspaper. Write them letters, call them, email them. Don't give up. Now, after the talk earlier today about how this all, dealing with issues of raising children today, I want to mention one thing that's not in my outline. It's not even in my topic, but I want to leave you here. Your pastor needs the exact same thing on the subject of technology and youth culture. 2 to 3 people. I hold this up for the Missouri Synod. I challenge you as a denomination. I've challenged my own bishop about this too in the Orthodox Church. Once a year, the entire Missouri Synod should have a Sunday in which you discuss issues of technology and the family and the home. If you did nothing more than wrestle with the issues of when do you give children smartphones, by which 80% of them will have encountered online pornography by the age of 12, or do you just give them cell phones with no data, which prevents them from getting out into the worst part of the internet and also cuts down a lot of the hellish world of social media pressures on young people? Distribute books like The TechWise Family by Andy Crouch and deal with these things as Christians. Technology and media is a part of your world. It's a part of God's creation, and it is both glorious and fallen, just like us. It's not going to go away. The issue is not whether there is a perfect solution to any of these problems. This is a theme that kind of united several of our presentations today. The issue is not that there's a perfect solution to this. The issue is whether you're even going to try. Thank you very much.
That's Terry Mattingly's presentation from the 2017 Summer Making the Case Conference. When we come back from this break, Pastor Matt Harrison will be making the case for the relevance of the Reformation from the 2017 Summer Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
People are talking about the Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Lutheran FCU was created solely to serve LCMS workers, families, and entities, and proceeds benefit LCMS organizations. Lutheran FCU offers deposit accounts and loans and has service access at thousands of branches and ATMs nationwide. Lutheran FCU also offers members Christian-based lending advice for new loans and refinancing, minimal account fees, and superior personalized service. Check them out at LutheranFCU.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.